Hello. Welcome to The Lancet Neurology in conversation with our podcast to go with our February 2021 issue. I'm Gavin Cleaver. Today, we're in conversation with Professor Peter Rothwell, who is a professor of clinical neurology at Oxford University, where he founded the Stroke Prevention Research Unit. His new research, Risk of Stroke in Relation to Severity of Asymptomatic Carotid Stenosis, is included in our new issue, and he joins me today to discuss it. Professor Rothwell, welcome. So perhaps we could start then by, you could tell our listeners a little bit about the background to explain the kind of uncertainty around which patients with asymptomatic carotid stenosis should undergo EndoRECT.
There's a lot of controversy about asymptomatic carotid stenosis more generally, in the sense that in some countries, older patients are screened for stenosis as part of a general medical workup, and there's increasing evidence that when a stenosis is found in someone with no symptoms at all, the prognosis is relatively good, and therefore perhaps we shouldn't be screening. What often happens though is people have a TIA or a minor stroke and then get the investigation as part of their workup for what's caused their TIA or minor stroke. And that quite commonly throws up a stenosis of the carotid arteries, which may well be asymptomatic. And so that's a problematic group, because the patients had some symptoms already, perhaps not attributable to the stenosis, but they're probably at increased risk. And one of the confusing aspects of what we've known about asymptomatic carotid stenosis is that the degree of stenosis didn't seem to be related to the subsequent risk of stroke. In patients that have what we call a symptomatic carotid stenosis, where the stenosis has caused a TIA or a stroke, the degree of narrowing, the degree of stenosis, seems to be a very important predictor of stroke risk, and people have used that to help to select which patients might benefit from surgery or stenting. But that didn't seem to be the case, at least in clinical trials and in guidelines for asymptomatic patients.
So you took two approaches to kind of try and shed light on this issue. Tell us a little bit about the aims of your analysis of the Oxford Vascular Study cohort, and you have a separate as well, systematic review and meta-analysis.
Well, that's right. One of the problems with the existing evidence about the relationship between the degree of stenosis and stroke risk is that most of the evidence that quoted came from randomized controlled trials of endarterectomy for asymptomatic stenosis, and it's always uncertain to the extent to which those observations can be generalized to routine practice in the real world. So we tried to look at a very real world population based cohort of patients with asymptomatic stenosis from the Oxford Vascular Study, where we identified everybody in the population with a TIA or stroke, and then found that nearly all of whom had carotid imaging. And then we looked at those with an asymptomatic stenosis and followed them up to see whether or not the stroke risk was related to the degree of stenosis. And in fact, we found, contrary to the data from the trials, that in fact there was a strong relationship between the severity of the stenosis and the risk of stroke. So those with tight stenoses had a much higher risk of stroke than those with moderate stenoses. And so we thought that that very much weighed against the previous data from the clinical trials and from the guidelines. So as you say, we then did a systematic review to see whether there was any systematic difference in that finding between cohort studies that were relatively unselected patients versus the randomized control trials, where patients have been often highly selected. And we found exactly that. We found that in the cohort studies that have been published previously, the results were similar to what we'd found in the Oxford Vascular Study. In other words, the tighter the stenosis, the higher the stroke risk. And it was only the randomized trials that were different, and they stood out as being completely different. And one of the potential explanations for that, we thought, was that if you have a trial cohort where there's uncertainty about whether intervention is beneficial for asymptomatic stenosis, clinicians will tend to recruit patients with moderate stenoses that look otherwise in some way nasty. So, for example, they're only a moderate stenosis, but there's an ulcer, or the patient seems very high risk in other ways. Whereas patients with very severe stenosis that might normally be operated out with the trial only tend to get into the trial if the stenosis is very smooth and looks low risk in other ways. So in fact, you have this inherent bias built into the trials in relation to the degree of stenosis. They tend to include high-risk moderate stenoses and low-risk severe stenoses. And so that would therefore predict that you wouldn't find a relationship between stroke risk and degree of stenosis. And that certainly seemed to be consistent with what we found.
So with this relationship then, between stroke and a degree of stenosis, what are the implications for clinical practice and research going forwards?
Well, I think that at least two things. One is that in those countries where people operate a lot for asymptomatic stenosis, either surgery or stenting, then I think what we found was that if you only have a moderate stenosis, then the risk of stroke really is very low on modern medical treatment. And so in the US, for example, where 90% of carotid endarterectomies are done for asymptomatic stenosis, then they probably should be operating on fewer patients with moderate stenosis. On the other hand, those countries such as the UK, where we tend to be much less interventional and we tend to do very little surgery for asymptomatic stenosis, we've perhaps, I think, underestimated the potential benefits from endarterectomy for more severe stenosis. The severity of stenosis is not the only factor that's important, and there are other investigations that people can do to try and prognosticate, but I think we have certainly underestimated the risk, I think. But so the implications vary very much depending on the country.
What are some of those country differences?
So in the US, the rates of endarterectomy per head of population are much higher than in the UK, and that's driven almost completely by much higher rates of surgery for asymptomatic stenosis. In patients that have a TIA or stroke and have a severe stenosis, then they tend to be operated or stented uniformly in all countries that have the capacity to do that. So the national differences tend to be the extent to which people intervene in asymptomatic patients. So the rates are very high in the US. They're intermediate in Europe. In certain European countries, Germany and France, for example, and they're much lower in the UK, where we tend to be very, very evidence-based and only do what is shown to be beneficial in trials. But this may be an example where, because of the selection biases we discussed, the trials might potentially underestimate benefit, at least in patients with severe stenosis.
So in terms of asymptomatic stenosis then, what are some of the questions that kind of need to be addressed by future research?
I think one of the difficulties we have now is that the old trials that were done a few years ago were done before the days of very intensive medical treatment. So many of them were done before statins and certainly before more aggressive blood pressure lowering became common and well before the newer lipid lowering drugs. And so there's still uncertainty about whether endarterectomy or stenting would be substantially better than the very best medical treatment at the moment. So not just, for example, a high-dose statin, but also ezetimibe and some of the other more advanced lipid-lowering therapies. I think we still don't know. We still don't have a comparison of intervention versus no intervention in the context of the very best medical treatment.
Well, thank you to Professor Rothwell, and thanks to you for listening to The Lancet Neurology in Conversation With. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you usually get your podcasts, and we'll see you again next time.